This is the Real Magic Podcast. Learn about great design and use it to get great results. Now your hosts, Greg Merrilees and Alan Nunez.
Hello, listener, and thank you for joining Greg and I today for the Real Magic Design Podcast, where we try to unpack our experience and help designers and business owners understand how to create amazing designs and work together to make design that's profitable. I am Alan from Pixel Partners HQ, and this is my fabulous co-host, Greg from Studio One Design.
G'day, Al. Great to be here, buddy. On this podcast, we're talking about what makes a good design, how to know if your design is a winner, and how to find the best designer for you. And if you are a designer, how to be the best designer for your client.
Wow, what makes a good design is going to be a fun topic to discuss. Hopefully it's going to stir a little bit of discussion between business owners and designers. But before we get into that, Greg, what have you been up to this week?
Well, you know, I just took a few days off, took the family down to a beach house, not ours, we just hired one, and just got away from work and computers and devices and just, you know, pretty much did some walking, got down back to nature and had some good old-fashioned family fun. So it's always nice to have a bit of a break. But, you know, apart from that, this week with business, I'm reviewing my pricing. So we're looking at introducing a recurring option, so just so we can provide more value to our loyal existing customers, you know, that have the ongoing need for design work. And really, I just want to offer them some wholesale pricing. So what about you, Al? What have you been up to?
Man, I've had an exciting week. Look, I like the idea of the fact that you're reviewing your pricing and you're looking at recurring options for loyal customers. And I think that'd make an awesome topic for a future podcast. So let's make a little note of that and listen out for that, because that one's going to be a good one. Look, I've had a bit of fun. I've actually been working on a project that I have a little bit of a passion for that involves community sports for kids. And look, I have to give credit to my awesome team of designers and managers. It's because of them that I've actually been able to have a little bit of free time and reignite this passion and help give back to the community. Look, as a business owner, I really am passionate of trying to give back and engage with the community. And this particular project, look, I'm keeping it a little bit secret at the moment because I'm just ironing out a few bumps. But, you know, it's actually a really interesting case study for this podcast, because it's a fusion of business, photography, design and production, and how we've managed to bring that all together to provide something that's awesome for these kids who play sport. Yeah, wow indeed. It's had its challenges over the years, so maybe I can give some insights into how we overcame those challenges and share that down the track. Yeah, so that's what I've been up to this week.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds awesome, man. The fact that you're, you know, merging every one of your skills and what your, you know, design, production and photography into one, I think that's going to be gold.
It should be interesting.
Cool, man. So, all right. Well, let's look at the first question in relation to what makes a good design.
All right. So, here's the question I want to pose, Greg. What is the difference between design and artwork?
All righty. So, look, it's an interesting question, and the reason I find it interesting is because I was speaking to an artist recently. I'm talking an artist who paints, and he said to me it's an insult to be called a designer, and I hadn't really thought about it, but
that's, you know, that's pretty funny. I got to admit, you know, you don't want to offend an artist.
Well, that's true. But to me, there's kind of a fine line, but there is a bit of a difference. However, you know, I mean, usually a designer is somebody who designs for commercial intent. An artist is somebody who creates artwork for either, you know, like personal use. It can be for commercial use, but usually it's just because they're following their passion. And they can make money out of it if they're dead. If they're really good. But, you know, generally, and they can design, sorry, they can create artwork on a computer as well, but usually it's using the traditional techniques like canvases, painting, illustrations, etc.
You know what? I'm going to say a quick apology to all those great artists that are still alive out there, all right? So, but look, I do get what you're saying. So what you're saying is, you know, an artist is creating something to create an emotional response when the viewer is viewing that artwork in whatever format it is. I mean, look, there is some great electronic art out there today, and there are still, you know, awesome traditional artists that use, you know, metal, wood, canvas, paints, that kind of thing, right? So let me ask you this, okay? So is art and design mutually exclusive? I mean, can an artist create great design? And the reason I ask this, Greg, is because I look at a lot of your T-shirt work, and yes, there's commercial intent, and yes, it's a design for a commercial purpose, but mate, there's a fine line there, because I would call a lot of that stuff art. It's really great.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there is a fine line. Not everybody can be an artist and a designer, but there are people that can cross over, that's for sure. And they're usually extremely talented. So we have artists on board and we have designers on board. And, you know, when it comes to a T-shirt design, you need a little bit of both in there. A lot of our T-shirt designs are hand illustrated, and then we'll, you know, use that illustration as a base for creating a design.
You see, I know a lot of designers that definitely do not call themselves artists. Yeah. And the same with photographers, you know, they use their set of tools more as a trade, you know. And I think the analogy that I might use is you can take a sculptor who will take a random log from a tree and will get into that log and hack away at it and come out with this beautiful sculpture made from wood, where you might get a joiner or a carpenter who takes the wood and neatly slices it and creates something functional like a chair or a table. You know, so maybe there is a fine line, and there's nothing to say that that carpenter couldn't create that great sculpture or that artist couldn't create that beautiful table, but you have to have the right one for the right job, I guess. You know, look, the thing I find really interesting is you talked about having, you know, a commercial intent for design versus art. And the thing that concerns me often is you see business owners go out there and they're, you know, they want to create a commercially viable design that's going to give them a return. Yet they go out and they use their sister-in-law's second cousin's wife, who's awesome at painting landscapes, you know, and that person may not have any formal training in design. They may be able to make something that looks good, but, you know, you could very well be doing yourself a disservice. And that's not to say that that person can't do it, but be sure that you are getting the right person for it. I mean, design in business is tactical and strategic and should have a clear purpose, you know, and definitely needs to have some kind of commercial intent. I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to find design in business that doesn't have some kind of commercial intent behind it. Would you agree with that, Greg?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, realistically, you're designing for, you're designing for another business. And the purpose of the design is generally to get that business more sales for whatever reason, whether it's a product or, you know, or a flyer or a website or whatever the case is. So, yeah, absolutely, buddy.
All right, so now we know what the difference between design and artwork is, right? Let's look at it from the client's point of view, right? How on earth does a client know if they're getting good or bad design? Or maybe the question should be, you know, what makes good design? So, Greg, when you're working on a job, what are the checkboxes you need to tick to ensure that you're giving the best design to your client?
I think it's pretty simple. We want the result for the client. So To give you an example, if we're talking about a flyer design, we want to be able to give them a deliverable result that they can measure. And so, for instance, you know, you can put things on the flyer that all add up to a design that's going to convert. Some of those elements might consist of, you know, a nice a headline, a call to action, imagery, colors, everything that ties in with trying to appeal to that target market. And so, you know, you might also put on there like a link back to, not a link, but a...
like a custom URL or something like that for the campaign.
Yeah, something exactly that you can measure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, look, you know, I think that's interesting. I think what you're kind of alluding to is that there's a set of things that you need to deliver in a design for it to be successful, right? And I encourage clients just to be a little cautious, right? Because we tend to, as business owners, want to overanalyze the design and make some really critical design decisions on the way something looks and feels before we've actually got it out to market to test it. And I think from my point of view, the reality is you won't know if the design is good or bad until you actually get it to market and you're running with it and you see the results, right? So that's not to say you're going to start with a bad design. You know, you're going to start with something that's good or great, but then you're going to improve on that over time. And especially in today's market, I mean, there's so many options out there, you know, this includes website design, you know. I mean, Greg, you do a fair bit of website design. What are the things that are important in that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you know, when somebody visits your website and they're cold, they probably stay for around 10 seconds, depending on the site load time, to work out whether or not that website suits their needs. So you definitely want to have a nice, you know, USP. So once again, it comes down to copy and all the elements within, but you want it to visually feel nice and not be too colorful. You really want to have a limited color palette, but the message that the website portrays needs to resonate with the target market. And so you've really only got about 10 seconds for the target market to work out if it's for them or not.
All right, so that covers web. What about other things like, you know, flyers, packaging? What are things that the business owner should be hunting for to see in their designs? Or even when they're looking for a designer, you know, what should they be looking for in their portfolio?
Like you said, every design product has a different purpose. So you really, I think if you're a business owner looking for a designer, you have to have a look at their portfolio. You have to have a look at the results that they get for their customers, you know, through their testimonials, case studies, etc. And really just work out if you like their design style for a start and if it's getting the results for the customers that they currently have. So, I mean, for instance, if you're looking for a flyer design, the elements of a good flyer design, pretty much what I said before, you really want to have some benefit-driven copy. So benefits are more important than features, for instance. And a lot of designers will get that around the other way. So a benefit is something that, you know, the client can expect to have as a result of using that product or service. You also want to have some social proof elements in there and always a clear call to action, what you want that person to do, for having the flyer. And usually give an offer in there as well. Some sort of sweet deal. And then I guess I might just jump on a packaging if I could, Alan. That is, packaging design. We used to do a lot of packaging design for the auto accessories industry. And a lot of our designs went into Walmart, Kmart, some pretty big retailers around the world. And, you know, in that space, it's similar to websites in the sense that it's a self-serve environment. But with products on a shelf, you really, once again, it's all about the color, the imagery, the messages. It's not really benefits. It's probably more feature-driven in that sense. I guess you guys do a lot of packaging, don't you, Al? So you probably have a bit more of an insight into that.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think packaging design is an interesting one because often packaging design has multiple elements, you know. So sometimes you want the front of the package to, you know, just move the person to the next step, which is to pick it up and have a look at the back of the package, get more information. In some instances, you know, the main face that's going to be seen in that retail outlet is all that's going to be seen, and it has to get that person's attention. We've been talking a little bit about what clients should be looking for, you know, when they're looking at good and bad design. And you and I have had a number of conversations about this in the past, and I really love the way you describe it. You know, there is a formula to design. You know, it's systematic. You know, and in each piece that you work on, there are certain things that you want to make sure are there in that design, you know. There's a couple of things that I want to highlight. Landmines that the business owners could potentially tread on, all right? And firstly, design does not have to be pretty, right? It has to look good. Right. But often I've found in my experience that, you know, the prettiest design doesn't always equal the design that's going to get you the best results. Right. So obviously you still, like I said, you want it to look good. You want it to look great. But be very careful that you're not trying to get something that looks good to you. you know, because that is very subjective. You've got to think about what's going to work for the prospect who's viewing it, right? And then within that formula, you know, you've got to make sure that all those elements are there and that the single clear message is there, right? So that it inspires the person viewing that piece of design to take some kind of action, you know. And in some cases, the action is just to remember that piece of design. It's to remember that brand or that product. And in other cases, it's to instill a purchase or get somebody to make a phone call or send an email or visit a website. There's plenty of things that you can have as your next action, but you need to be clear on what that message is, right? And you need to know that you are actually, you know, encouraging them to take that next step. So keep it simple, you know, really focus on what your clear single message is. I mean, I can think of a couple of good examples out in the market of beautifully simple design. What about you, Greg?
For sure, man. I mean, look, Apple, but I mean, before we get onto that, I just want to say that sometimes it's not exactly clear on how to use all these elements that contribute to a nice, you know, nicely designed product or you know, website, etc. So what I find is that we over the years have developed questionnaires for each one of our products, and this really benefits the client and the designer because in the process of the questionnaire, you're getting the client to think about everything that they would need in the design to get the result. So a lot of the questions are, you know, sure, there might be a few around the design as well, but they also revolve around their marketing funnel and, you know, their offer, etc., because those things are extremely important. So yeah, from my point of view, to streamline the process, a questionnaire can help get a really good design.
Man, I think you've just opened Pandora's box there, Greg, for another podcast episode, which is, you know, how to get a design brief from your client, and if you're the client, how to give a design brief. I mean, designers know how to work with a design brief, but you know, that's not necessarily natural for the client. But look, I think we'll definitely talk about that in a future episode. But yeah, just back to the topic of, you know, what should the client be looking for good design? You know, what's a really great example of good design that you can illustrate?
Apple. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, everybody say that, Greg? Apple.
They do. But there's no doubt that they really put a focus on simplicity and good customer experience. So, you know, that's one thing we haven't touched on yet. But if you can, through design, give somebody a good customer experience, that means so much more than just something that looks pretty. So Apple are the masters at it. There's no way, no doubt in that they, you know, they concentrate on simplifying every one of their products, and they put a lot of effort into that. You know, there's so much work that goes into simplifying because you got to get rid of all the stuff that you want to put in there, but is just causing confusion. So they're just masters at it, in my opinion.
Look, you know, I'm going to back you up on Apple. You know, their design is not just visually enticing, but, you know, when you unpack an Apple product, it is an experience. You know, and look, I'm sorry out there to all the PC fans, but you've got to admit, whether you're an Apple fan or a PC fan, you have to credit Apple for the way they design everything that they do, whether it be the product or the packaging or their marketing material. There is an elegant simplicity. And, you know, a few years ago, we worked on a new packaging line for a client. And it took us months to get the packaging right. And it had to have three simple elements. And it was extremely difficult to actually have that come together so it could be used across an entire range and look amazing and beautiful, you know. So, you know, keeping things simple is really key to a lot of this stuff. Now, business owners, here we go. Be careful, right? Because I have a lot of people come to me and say, we want an Apple-esque design, yet they're trying to jam huge amounts of information into very small spaces, you know. So you need to try and simplify. You need to know what your, you know, single clear message is going to be. Now, that's not to say it's the only thing that's going to be on there, but it has to be clear. It has to be the main purpose of the design, you know. And it is getting easier in today's market to work with designers and streamline. You know, and a good example for me would be websites, right? clients come to people like you, Greg, and say, I would like a website, correct?
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Right. And keep going.
So my thing is, you're not designing a website. You should be designing individual web pages, right? And you should have a clear purpose for each and every one of those. Because the reality is, a consumer can only ever look at one page of that website at a time, right? So a lot of people are trying to jam a lot on the homepage. Okay, that's fine. But you can break up that homepage. I mean, I've seen a few of your designs, Greg, that have beautiful, long scrolling designs that are in fashion today, right? But everything is designed in a manner that the eye easily flows from section to section, and you know what the next step is that you want to, that needs to be taken when you're viewing that section. And that's what's important, is understanding what it is you're designing and making sure that it is cohesive and easy for the client to understand what's going on.
Most definitely. There's an art to that, that's for sure. We've been designing websites for around 5 years, and over the years, you know, website trends change and technology changes, and, you know, trying to make the most of that and still, working with a lot of marketers, understanding the purpose of, you know, of what they need their website to do, it's something that we're constantly refining. And yeah, it's really important to have flow on a web page design. And you're right, it's better to concentrate on one page at a time and really think about the clear purpose of that page and try and simplify it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, you need to keep a number of elements in there, brand consistency, stuff like that. But, you know, you just mentioned something that spurs me to ask you my next question, right? Because now we've gone from, you know, what the client should be looking at in good design, but the other side of that coin is, you know, from a designer's point of view, what should you be aiming to deliver with good design, and what tips have we got, or what techniques have we got that we use to make sure those elements are there?
Sure, man. So look, we have a few designers in our team. I'm sure you do too, Al. And
yeah, just a couple.
And you can give a single design brief to each one of those designers, and you'll get a different result. You can guarantee it. So it's just one thing to be wary of, and over time you get to learn which designer suits which brief you're going to give them. One thing that we all try and achieve in our design for a website, etc., is the color. We always start with a simple color palette, or we try to, depending on the client's branding. But if they don't have branding, we'll really generally just start with a simple color palette. Obviously the marketing messages and copy, etc., is absolutely crucial. And then what we do is we create images that suit the copy. We always try to also give a lot of clear space around messages and call to actions, just to really draw the focus to the things that you want people to read. Flow is obviously important. But also, lately, design trends just keep changing faster and faster. They're kind of like fashion in a sense. And I guess that's good because it keeps us in business. But today there's trends, like you mentioned before, there's long scrolling pages and parallax effects and things like that. So a parallax effect is where the background image moves at a different rate to a foreground image. And sure, that looks good, but you really have to try not to overuse these latest trends and try and use them where you think they're absolutely relevant. The other problem with these new effects is they do slow the website down, which takes longer for load time. Just try and, use technology, whatever's available to you at the time. Try and stay on top of trends and really reflect the time and the location of the purpose of that design.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I'm just going to add a little bit to what you were saying about color and marketing messages. I think, consistent brand identity in design is important, so trying to make sure that you are actually delivering something that is consistent with that brand. I mean, I have a client whose brand is somewhat dated, it's been around a while, but it would be absolute brand suicide to change that, despite the fact that everybody within the business does sometimes look at the brand and go, oh, it would be nice for a revamp. It is so well known in the industry. We modernize it with supporting designs, you know, modernize images, modernize copy fonts and things like that. But the brand essence remains the same. I mean, look, Coca-Cola is a great example of that. I mean, their brand has changed ever so slightly over the years, but it has always maintained the core look and feel across its products. You know, trendy stuff, you know, designs don't have to be trendy, although it is good to know what is in fashion at the time. Look, in our business, we have a fun little exercise that we do on a daily basis, and we call it PXP, Excited Every Day, right? So what I do is I tell my guys, I want you to go out into the big wide world of the web, into your local shops, wherever you can, you know, find inspiration, whether it be in construction and architecture or in fashion, wherever it might be, in packaging, and find examples of things that excite you and inspire you. And I'm not just talking about physical things as well. Often they will bring up things that they've done with their family. They'll bring up, art that they've seen around the place, music. And what we do is we send that out to the team as part of the PXP, which is short for Pixel Partners, Excited Every Day movement. And what that does is it allows the whole team to engage with things that are current and that are exciting themselves and people out in the world on a daily basis. And we love it. I mean, you know, if anybody's short on inspiration within the team, they can literally go into their mailbox and they'll have a folder and they can just scroll through all these emails. And often they'll have links to other sites and they can grab inspiration from completely unrelated industries to bring into the design that they're currently working on. Greg, how on earth do you manage to keep up with trends? Because I know that some of your stuff is really sharp when it comes to what's going on in the market.
Yeah, well, that's awesome that you guys do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, hey?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we sort of collect stuff in a different way, but I mean, what we do is we have a structured folder system of designs that we collect on a daily basis. And so if any one of our designers finds some new inspiration, we just dump it into, you know, the current month's design inspiration folder. And, you know, we break that up into, say, websites or flyers or, you know, whatever it is, basically logo design, etc. One place that I find really good for getting, latest trend designs is Pinterest. Pinterest is amazing these days.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, man, it's absolutely gold. So, you know, we try not to spend too much time in there, but, you know, you can just put some nice keywords in relevant to what you're looking for. And the results are absolutely stunning. So
it's funny though, because you said you don't spend too much time in there, but it's almost, for a designer, it's almost counterintuitive, you know, because you invest a little bit of time in doing this on a regular basis and seeing what's out there, and it does help you rapidly come up with concepts because you've got really great fresh ideas in your mind, and you can sort of pick and mix at all the different things that you've seen and bring those elements together to create something that really is just amazingly good for your clients. Look, I was just a little stunned. You mentioned something before. Now, did I hear this right? You break this down monthly.
We do, yeah. We just have a monthly folder, you know.
Wow.
May, June, July, etc. And, yeah, we just find over a month we'll collect between, you know, maybe 50 and 100 pieces of reference. And it's good to have it in a monthly format so that you can look over the months or over the years even. We've been doing this for, you know, probably 10 years actually. And you look at the design trends back then to now, and it's just really good to see the difference.
So you could actually go back to your files and you could look at December 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and today. That's pretty cool, you know, because there's some great inspiration to be taken, you know, on fashion cycles, you know, because things do come back around and become trendy again. But, you know, we don't break it down by months, but I'm inspired by that. I think that's something that I'm going to talk to my team about. At the moment, we do a bit of a catch-all for inspiration. But I think your idea of breaking it down monthly takes a certain level of commitment, but I can see the benefit in it.
Yeah, it's just easier to find stuff as well. Like if we all put it into one big folder, sure, you can sort by date, but this way you've just got the relevant ones and you can see it, especially if you view it in Bridge, for instance, Adobe Bridge, you can just see an overview of the trends for that month, which is really cool.
Hey, listen, just before we move on in the podcast, there's just a couple of other things that I think, not so much about the way a design looks, but what a designer should be doing for their client that we should mention. You know, firstly, a design should aim to have a clear single message. So a designer should not be afraid to push back somewhat and say, hey, listen, you know, I can't work out what your clear single message is. Now, if a designer can't work out what the clear purpose of that design is, Greg, it does get harder, wouldn't you say, to actually come up with a great design if you've got mixed messaging in there?
Yep, absolutely. And that's why I go back to the questionnaire, because you know, it's impossible unless you're really clear as a designer to what the outcome is and what the purpose of that design is for that client. Yeah,
but the thing is, the thing that I find, right, and correct me if you perceive this differently, but you'll start off with a great design brief. It will have a clear single message because that's what you've asked for. But until the client actually sees the design in context, they're not quite sure. Right, so you've asked them for a clear message, a clear single message, and that's what you've put in there. But how often do they then start to load up that design after they've seen it? It's, oh yes, by the way, we've got to mention this, and we've got to have that, and you know, we can't just have our main phone number. We have to have a phone number for every office, and you know, all of a sudden, your clear single message does get very messy. I mean, look, at the end of the day, right, designers, you are the design professional. Okay, you do need to be considerate of the client's needs, right? But this is one thing I see all the time. There is a difference between what the client needs and what the client wants. And a designer should tread carefully and try and differentiate between those things and go back to the client and say, listen, you know, I understand that that's what you want. But in my opinion, for this design to work, what you need is A, B, and C. Right? And quite often, you know, what they need and want are miles and miles apart.
That can be true, absolutely. So, yeah, it's a good point that you really have to just communicate with them as well. And they are hiring you because, you know, if you're the designer, because you're the expert. So try and keep that in mind.
Oh, look, you know, you have to be considerate of their needs. But you know, you are the design professional. Make sure you help out that client because that's not what their expertise is. Man, I don't know. There was some real gold in that, and I think we're going to have to continue this in a later podcast. But at this point now, we're at this segment in our podcast where we have listener tips for this week. So, Greg, all yours, mate. What's your listener tip for this week?
So I really just encourage every designer to start collecting, if you're not already, reference, both online and offline. So We collect reference from anywhere. I mean, it might just be at an event or a shop or, you know, just at, you might be out at dinner and there might be a menu. It's just everywhere. There's posters. So just collect reference, anything that you like the look of, whether it's a font or a color or a composition, collect as much as possible. It might be a t-shirt print. So that's what I recommend.
Yeah, definitely. And file it monthly. That's a great idea, Greg. File it monthly. You said that before. And look, let me just make a little point. Particularly if you're searching the web, take a screenshot. Because just because it's there today doesn't mean it's going to be there in a month's time. So grab a screenshot and put it in your file. My tip is, you know, and this goes for business owners and designers, right? Grab some of your recent designs, right? Lay them out in front of you and pick one. All right, and grab a piece of paper or a notepad or an Evernote or whatever it might be and list the number of things that you're trying to tell the audience or you're trying to tell the viewer and ask yourself, firstly, is there one clear message, right? And if there isn't, right, and if you count up the number of things you're trying to tell the audience and it's more than a handful, then and there isn't one primary message, then why not just start with a blank canvas and try and declutter it and thin it out and see if your design is improved by that. I mean, designers, if you grab a piece that you've done for a client recently and you do that exercise, you know, even if you did one per month and sent it to a client and said, hey, listen, we've been reviewing what you're at. Maybe the next time we do this design for you, you could consider this and this is why, right? And if you're a business owner, you know, it can get pretty scary how cluttered a design can be without even realizing. You know, you get to the end of the process and there's a lot more there than you started with. So go out and review some of the recent things that you've done. Greg, that brings us to the end of our podcast. I'd like to say farewell and thank you to the listener. It's been great today. Please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. We would love that. And go to our website, therealmagic.com, and sign up to find out when we have a new episode that is published so you can be first to listen. Greg, I've had a great time. How about you, mate?
Yeah, absolutely, Al. It's been a fun episode. I think, we've shared a lot of gold for businesses and designers to help get a better design. I would just like to thank everybody as well for listening, and have a great week. We'll catch you next time.
See you, Greg.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Real Magic Podcast. Hear more at therealmagic.com.